49, Office of Long-Term Care Ombudsman.
Congratulations on being able to say Ombudsman so early in the morning.
Try remonstrances.
No, no. You're going to end up with a bleeding tongue when I say that, you know?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Meredith Cote, and I am the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman and direct the activities of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. And I'm here today with Kathy Walter, the Program Administrator for the agency. And I'd also like to point out that we have two members of our Long-Term Care Advisory Committee here, the Chair, Bill Lykin, and Gene Williams. Bill is from Representative Richardson's district, and Gene Williams is from the Tigard area. We also have some of our local volunteer ombudsmen are also here with us today.
But if I may, Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
Some of those volunteers, and we are very glad they're here, but some of those volunteers have particular sports gear on that is offensive to those of us, Mr. Ponce.
Have you ever noticed that people with the brightest clothes wear sunglasses? We should be wearing sunglasses.
Right? It's to remind us what we're missing by staying in this building all day into the night.
But welcome and good to meet you, sir. Matters.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Westland, would you like me to use my authority to remove them from the room?
No, actually, it's a good distraction.
Actually, I thought you'd advocate for them since it's kind of like the ombudsman thing.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't
point well taken,
and
Mr. Chairman.
Dive into this.
The Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is an advocacy agency that works on behalf of long-term care residents. And long-term care facilities in which these residents live are our assisted living facilities, our nursing homes, our residential care facilities, and our adult foster care homes. The mission of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is to enhance the quality of life, improve the level of care, protect individual rights, and promote the dignity of each Oregon citizen residing in a long-term care facility. A team of trained volunteers, 259 strong, work throughout Oregon to accomplish the agency goals, supported by a paid staff of 8 full-time equivalent employees. The agency is charged with both individual and system advocacy and has 4 program goals: to identify, investigate, and resolve complaints made by or on behalf of the residents of long-term care facilities, to establish a routine presence in long-term care facilities using a cadre of trained program volunteers, to ensure that consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies are aware of the Ombudsman program and its services, and to advocate for system-wide changes that promote and protect the interests of long-term care residents. In a historical perspective, the Ombudsman program came into being in the early 1970s when the Nixon administration initiated a nursing home ombudsman program that would focus exclusively on residents' rights and preferences in response to growing concerns about the quality of care in nursing facilities and the government's ability to enforce regulations in those facilities. In the 1978 amendments to the Older Americans Act, the U.S. Congress required each state to establish an ombudsman program. And the program quickly proved its value, and Congress strengthened the program's authority and independence and expanded its purview to all adult care homes in subsequent amendments to the Act. And a lot of people get confused about the term ombudsman in the program, and the classic model of the ombudsman stresses neutrality and mediation, but the role of the long-term care ombudsman is considered a hybrid, and it was designed to encompass active advocacy and representation of residents' interests. The history of the program in Oregon, it started in its early years in the Department of Human Services and then spent several years in the governor's office. It became an independent state agency as a result of legislative action in 1995. And its enabling legislation in the state is ORS 441-100-153. And there's a long-term care advisory committee, two of the members that I introduced earlier, and they are appointed by the governor and the legislative leadership, and their responsibility is to monitor the ombudsman program and report to the governor and the legislature. The agency was structured to ensure sufficient organizational autonomy to allow ombudsmen an independent voice and to freely represent the needs and interests of long-term care facility residents. And the legislative intent was that the program be a separate agency so that its policy decisions would not be dictated or influenced by another agency with conflicting interests, different interests, or even similar interests but different priorities. As an independent agency, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program provides an essential check and balance to other agencies involved with long-term care residents and is free from conflict of interest as required by federal law. And the agency is really part of Oregon's quality assurance effort in long-term care, but the unique aspect of the program is that it works solely on behalf of the resident. The program leverages the commitment, the time, and the caring of trained volunteers throughout Oregon in service to some of its most vulnerable citizens. In a 1995 study of the State Ombudsman Program, the Institute of Medicine wrote, "If care in nursing and board and care homes in the United States were provided in a manner in which minimal standards of care were met, no disagreement nor disharmony arose, and no personal rights were violated, there would be little need, if any, for the Ombudsman Program. However, this is not the case, and the program was designed to function in settings where disagreement can be expected." In 1991, Oregon was identified as one of the 12 model ombudsman programs in the nation by the Department of Human Services Office of the Inspector General. Their report praised the expeditious handling of complaints, high visibility, strong enabling legislation, legal support, and independent status. Oregon continues to deliver a strong ombudsman program despite limited resources. And what I provided for you here is a comparison of where the Oregon program ranks nationally and also how it compares to some of our neighboring states. And as you can see, Oregon ranks 23rd in the country in the number of long-term care facility beds. The Ombudsman Program funding ranks 30th. In funding per long-term care facility bed, the program ranks 44th. In the number of certified ombudsmen, the program ranks 14th. The number of facilities visited at least quarterly, the program ranks 38th. And the program is 50th. Out of 52 programs in the number of paid professional staff per long-term care facility bed. So that just gives a overview of the program and where it came from, sort of where it is today, and how it ranks among its peers nationally. If there are no questions, I'll move.
I have a question on.
Oh, surely.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair?
I'm looking at the graph, and you're about to go into that. I'm on page 5.
The graph on page 5? That's where I was, so
okay, can
Mr. Chairman, have at it.
Okay, I'm looking for points that are focused on outcomes, not outputs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so when I see number of complaints handled, you know, that is kind of a tells how many complaints are received and how many are dealt with, but it doesn't tell how they're resolved, whether or not the result of the complaints were dealt with in a way that solved the problem. If I see number of beds, you know, that's just an indication of the reality of what exists in every state and so forth, but can you tell me what the performance measures ought to be that tell us that the Ombudsman Program is doing a good job and not merely how it compares with the job that it's doing?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, and we can either get into that now in our performance measures or we can We're almost there in terms of the presentation, but what we do...
Is this graph, are all of the listings here, is this the entire study, or are these just kind of selected line items from a larger source of information?
Well, what this is from is that on a yearly basis, all 52 long-term care ombudsman programs under the purview of the Federal Administration on Aging have to report to that agency. And that agency then develops a report based on all of our complaint data, and we have very specific instructions as to what information they want from us. They compile a report, and this is information from that report. And so it isn't designed in terms of performance measures. It's designed in terms of how the federal government examines the programs and compares them.
Okay. So there are other items in the report that aren't listed here. These are a selected list, or is this the report?
Mr. Chairman, the report is rather extensive. It gets into all of the complaint information about long-term care facilities that all of the agencies put together. I believe it talks about issues that the long-term care ombudsmen are seeing in long-term care within their states. So it is part of a larger report.
Can we see a copy of that report then? If you would
absolutely, it. Absolutely. It might even be a ream. So,
well, electronically be fine.
but I think it is about a ream, so absolutely.
Great, thank you. Okay, please continue.
The program, the Ombudsman Program is a single program agency, and its target, again, is the residents of Oregon's long-term care facilities, and that is 142 nursing facilities, 238 residential care facilities, 192 assisted living facilities, and 1,709 non-relative adult foster care homes. And residents in these different facilities require varying levels of assistance, from minimal help with activities of daily living to skilled nursing care. And in general, there's just a profound sense of mental and physical dependency. The agency serves the residents by, number one, investigating and resolving complaints made by or on behalf of the residents. The agency also establishes a community presence in long-term care facilities throughout the state. It provides consultations, technical assistance, and education to numerous entities in the long-term care system, including families, facility staff, agencies, guardians, attorneys, and all sorts of other individuals inquiring about long-term care. We inform policymakers and community organizations and provider groups about the issues and problems of residents. We monitor the implementation of federal, state, and local laws, regulations, and other governmental policies and actions that pertain to the health, safety, and rights of the residents.
Okay, thank you. Interrupt just for a moment. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kind of interaction do you have with the home care provider workers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, none. We don't have a purview in the area of home care because our purview extends to long-term care facilities. And so we don't work in that home in the home environment. There are some state long-term care ombudsman programs I know in a few states that have extended their purview into that arena.
Okay, within the arena that you do work, which is in the assisted living, nursing homes, foster care, and adult foster home. Those I don't know if I had the terminology right, but what involvement do you have with care providers in those facilities? Do they work with you? How do you get brought in when complaints are given? What are the nature of the delivery of the complaints?
Mr. Chairman, we have constant and continuous interaction with the providers in long-term care facilities. Our long-term care ombudsman volunteers As we will talk about, go into those facilities. They interact with those providers. Those providers are a source of information. When ombudsmen are investigating complaints, they're interacting with them, and when they're resolving complaints, and they're interacting with those care providers in those facilities.
As an example, would you do if an ombudsman was in a facility and saw shortcomings of care, where would you go with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, if we saw shortcomings in care, we would identify those. We would investigate to assemble the facts surrounding those shortcomings, and then we would endeavor to try to resolve that issue. And as most of our complaints are resolved within the four walls of the facility, so what we would do is engage in, after the investigation, in problem resolution with the facility in an effort to address those concerns.
Okay.
The agency also serves as the voice of the resident in public policy forums and the advocate for change that protect their rights and interests. And, of course, we recruit, train, and supervise a statewide volunteer network. And on page eight, we have the organizational chart of the agency, in which we've tried to show you staff responsibilities as well as the areas in which we have volunteers, and we do have, which I'll make reference to later, a chart in the appendix which is much more specific than that. The office has developed three volunteer roles to carry out its program goals, and one is the certified ombudsman. And these volunteers actually contract with the agency to provide regular facility visitation and complaint investigation and resolution services to approximately 100 long-term care facility residents after satisfactorily completing a 6-day certification training. When a certified ombudsman is assigned to a nursing facility, assisted living facility, or residential care, they are asked to visit at least every 2 weeks, but preferably on a weekly basis. When they are assigned to adult foster care homes, they are asked to visit at least quarterly, but preferably on a monthly basis. And the way the ombudsman work in the program, or the way that we do this process of assignment, is that people actually take responsibility for facilities, and that is a formal process by which we notify the facility in writing. We have a phone contact in which we introduce the local ombudsman to the facility, and we also send the facility an update of the required poster that they must post in the facility, which explains our services and gives the contact number, both of the state toll-free number, but also of the local volunteer ombudsman. And we have two other roles in the program, volunteer roles, and one is a friendly visitor role, and this one is done in cooperation with facilities. And
Senator Moss Henderson.
Yeah. How many certified ombudsmen do we have?
Chairman Richardson, Senator Moss Henderson, currently we have 163 certified ombudsman volunteers throughout the state. Friendly visitors complete a much more modest 1-day training, and what they do is they visit lonely or isolated residents in the facility, and we found this to be a very important part of our service continuum, because we actually have case after case of very concrete evidence that shows that that these volunteers are able to mitigate the deleterious effects of resident isolation, especially depression and withdrawal. We've had facilities call, and we've had some of our friendly visitors actually go in with residents that had that were rejecting all visitors, all contact with anyone from the outside, and through perseverance and gentle contact, our volunteers have been able to draw them out and allow them to be a more fully participating part of their long-term care facility community. So we've actually found it to be a very valuable service, and quite frankly, it has a very marked and positive effect on people's quality of life. We also have recruitment and screening committee members that are volunteers throughout the state, and they create public awareness of the program and its services. They recruit and screen the program volunteers, interview them, and they manage the friendly visitor programs. So the friendly visitor program is entirely volunteer run and managed, and all the training emanates from other volunteers. Every day in their communities throughout the state, volunteer certified ombudsmen visit the residents of Oregon's long-term care facilities with the goal of improving those residents' lives by responding to their concerns and advocating on their behalf. And in addition to their visits, the ombudsmen receive telephone calls at their homes, including nights and weekends. In fact, one of the volunteers, Dale Hoback, who's with us today, told me that I mentioned that it was kind of early for him to be coming out this morning, and he says, well, at 6 o'clock, one of my residents called. So I have constant verification that the residents are reaching out to these volunteers and communities around the state. But through these calls, the people are requesting assistance with their problems affecting residents of long-term care facilities. And as informal problem solvers, volunteer ombudsmen can solve many issues quickly within the walls of the facility, as I was mentioning earlier, before they escalate and require regulatory attention. And these ombudsmen respond to a wide variety of complaints, and in all the years that I've been doing this, I hardly think a week goes by that I don't see a new complaint of first impression, something, a fact pattern, a complaint that I've never seen before. I mean, it's as wild as the imagination. And we deal with complaints relating to evictions, medications, meals, visitors, roommates, conflicts, activities, staffing, billing, charges, lost or stolen property, personal hygiene, guardianships, and it just goes on and on. And the way the program is structured is four deputy state ombudsmen, each would have a purview of a responsibility for a region of the state, and they divide their time between volunteer technical assistance and supervision, direct complaint investigation, facility monitoring, training, and consultation. And the agency's toll-free number, which is 1-800-522-2602, and that facilitates requests for assistance at the Salem office. And in the appendices, we've included three charts that might be helpful for you. And there's the chart on page 53 shows the statewide distribution of volunteers and facilities. And so what you see is you'll see by county or by district, you'll see how many facilities of what kind, how many beds of what kind, what percentage of the total facilities there are in the state, and you'll also see a list of the volunteers that we have in that region, both friendly visitor and ombudsman. And then on a chart starting on page 54, what we sort of wanted to do on that, and let me make a correction. At the top of the chart, it says it's something to the effect of a sample of complaints coming into the Salem office in January of 2004, and that should be January of 2005. And what we wanted to do is, sometimes people from the outside just, you know, we can talk about complaint categories like lost or stolen property or personal hygiene or billing, but lots of times it's hard for people who don't do this work to imagine sort of what the kinds of fact patterns are with the complaints that are coming into the office. So in the chart on page 54, what we did is we just tried to provide you a sample of the kinds of complaints that come into the Salem office that we are working to resolve on a daily basis, basis with people from all around the state. And then that particular chart is followed by one on page 58. And the chart on page 58, what that does is it gives you a summary. When we report to the Federal Administration on Aging every year, and we do it at the end of January of every year, and it's for the preceding fiscal year, which the most recent reporting period that we just did to the federal government commenced on October 1, 2003, and ended on September 30th, 2004. And so in that chart that we've provided with you, it's all the complaints by categories as they're required by the federal government, and then we also have a column that indicates whether those complaints were verified or not. And so that's just to give you an overview of the 4,213 complaints that that we handled in the program during that most recent federal fiscal reporting period. If there are no further questions, I'll get into the meat of the performance measures.
I do have a question.
Anderson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are most of your clients elderly, or are there disabled that are in the nursing facilities that you get complaints on that you serve?
Chairman Richardson, Senator Mona Sanderson, it's a combination, particularly in the metro area, in the area that you're from, for example. There are a lot of younger people with disabilities in those homes, and we have a population also of people with mental illness that we respond to.
Thank you.
Are there other questions at this point?
Just a couple of general questions.
Sure. Senator Bates.
First, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I know this is a difficult job you're doing, and we appreciate the work you're doing. If Senator Winters was here, this is a special interest to her, and you know how she feels about your agency. She's unfortunately out with an illness and will be back. But as a former ombudsman, I can't even say the word at any time of the day, and head of the department, I know she's very interested in the work you do and the great job you've been doing. My questions are pretty from the point of view of future challenges you're going to face and facing right now. We have an aging population, an enlarging population that I think will probably be seen in foster, residential, and health care, probably not so much in extended care facilities. Have you looked to the future of the next 4 or 5 years as the demographics change and as population ages increases, how you're going to handle that kind of a load? Has there been any, I didn't see any discussion of that specifically here. And the other question I have related to that is we're seeing more and more people in in-home care, either by relatives or by in-home care workers. That's not part of your purview. I know that. But I worry about those people. You know, we have a situation there where a disabled or elderly person is getting services, and we have a very difficult time of seeing what kind of quality that care is. Have you ever thought that we need to look at that area also in your spare time?
Chairman Richardson, Senator Bates, yes to both of your questions, but let me be more specific. In terms of the demographics, we work in an environment of with long-term care facilities, and the number of long-term care facility beds in Oregon has increased by 49% from 1990 to the present. So we've gone from about 28,000 beds to almost 42,000 beds. Now, what we have done in the state, and it'll be interesting, is that, as you know, I think you're sponsor of a bill that continues the moratorium, but there was a concern that, you know, if you build them, they shall come. And so, and there was also a lot of overcapacity in our system. So our work is really constrained by the decisions the state makes on how many long-term care facility beds they're going to be out there. And so with the demographic, you know, that's the big elephant in the room, so to speak, is with this demographic of exploding potential for people needing long-term care, how is the state going to respond? And it's a big issue, and it probably will take a lot of us thinking very hard about what the options are. But in terms of our day-to-day work, yes, the beds are increasing in Oregon. There's no question about it. And we are, and we're running as fast as we can to try to keep up with it. And I guess that's the story right now, is that what we do day in and day out is look at how we can marshal our resources, understanding that we have a volunteer program and you still have to have a modicum of a job that's enjoyable to the volunteer. How do you marshal your resources in such a way to maximize your ability to get into this growing number of long-term care facility beds? So the issue with respect to home care is, you know, the fact of the matter is that when people are in a state of being puny, and that is they're physically or mentally just unable, do not have the wherewithal to care for themselves, and they're dependent, those people need advocates, because when you can barely make decisions about, you know, what you're going to wear in a given day, or you're having difficulties, or you're just the fact that you're dependent on anyone makes you very vulnerable. So I agree. I think that there needs to be some program of quality assurance in the home care, and whether it's an ombudsman or some other mechanism, and I know that Senior Services is looking at that and looking at getting to a place where they have some really strong quality assurance in that area. But I still think, and I agree with you, that it is an area ripe for problems. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't come our way as an agency, because most people understand that that's just not what we do. But I do think it's worthy of attention, and at some point I do think it will need to be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
The agency developed 13 performance measures that are tied to its four agency goals, and we've included our 2004 performance measure report and an updated data summary are included in the appendix, which is begins on page 68. But here today, I'd like to focus on 8 key performance measures for our program. And the first one is the percentage of non-referred complaints that are partially or fully resolved. The next will be the percentage of abuse complaints that are referred appropriately. There will be 3 measures that focus on the percentage of facilities visited at least one time in each calendar quarter, and that's to ensure that residents have access to ombudsman services at least minimally throughout the year. The number of certified ombudsmen, the number of requests for assistance and consultation from consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies. And then looking at the legislative, regulatory, and policy issues in which the program has significant input. Performance measure 1 is tied to goal number 1, and that is identify, investigate, and resolve complaints made by or on behalf of residents of long-term care facilities. And in federal fiscal year 2004, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program responded to 4,213 complaints. Of those, 3,226 were handled by the Ombudsman Program without referral to another agency. And that's what this performance measure goes to, is the complaints that the program handles itself, and the level of resolution or of those cases. Basically, the goal of successfully resolving complaints brought by or on behalf of long-term care facility resident lies at the heart of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. As a resident-centered program, the Ombudsman Program works on the premise that what is important to the resident is important to the program. This measure addresses the agency's ability to bring a satisfactory conclusion to those complaints investigated by the agency, and again, that were not referred, for example, to Adult Protective Services. In 2004, 74% of non-referred complaints were resolved or partially resolved. and this was short of our 80% target. But after reviewing historical program data, we determined that the target was set too high given the increased complexity of complaints and the 18% in which no action was needed or appropriate. So we have reset the future target at 75%, and we believe we can reach that target by persistently pursuing a successful outcome for the residents. And
would you mind explaining why it's acceptable to be having a goal at 75% at a present rate of 74% when in 99 you were at 86%, 2000 is 84%, 2001 is 78%? I mean, why the lowering of the target?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the numbers for in terms of where the no action for needed, but if I could refer you to the chart on page 17. We have, and this is just for this particular period, but we have, when you add up the resolved and the partially resolved, and then you add up those in which no action was needed, we only have about 4% of complaints in which that were not resolved. And given the complexity of complaints, and by that I mean is that we have a lot of complaints coming in where residents' needs, for example, bump up against reimbursement limitations, or we've got situations where residents with significant behavioral issues that are very complex and they challenge the caregiving environment. And so some of these cases that we're coming up against, and some of them are symptoms of bigger underlying problems in facilities. And so we're dealing with what I think and what we've sort of reflected on is a growing complexity of complaints, and given what we have here, which shows that I guess we're comfortable with the fact, although we'd like to resolve them all, we're comfortable with the notion that that may not be possible, and that if it's 4 or 5% that we can't resolve, that that's still a pretty good record.
Okay, well, I'm kind of confused because I look at the chart on 15 and it says percentage of non-referred complaints that are partially or fully resolved. So 100%, we're dealing only with non-referred complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of 100% of non-referred complaints in 1999, 86% of them were either partially or fully resolved, and as of 2004, we're down to 74% of that 100% are partially or fully resolved, and we're lowering the expectation down to 75%. And so I'm a little confused about what the 4% is that you're referring to.
Well, what I was looking at, Chairman Richardson, is that on page 17 is that What we're factoring in when we looked at the data is that no action was needed or appropriate in 18% of those cases.
Well, since that means that they would be then fully resolved, right? Because you got a contact.
Mr. Chairman, we don't count those as being resolved if no action is needed or appropriate. That is, if we go in and we investigate a complaint, and it is determined that it is not verified and there's no action is needed or appropriate, we don't count that as a resolution of a complaint.
So is the way that you now deal with it different than it was in 1999?
Mr. Chairman, no, it isn't. And what I don't know in 1999 is what percentage of complaints in which, what I don't have here is in which no action was needed or appropriate. In other words, Mr. Chairman, in 1999, what I don't know right now talking to you is whether, yes, we did have a higher resolution rate, but I don't know whether we had a lower rate of complaints in which no action was needed or appropriate.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just with the information, because I'm looking at trend, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. trend is going down, mm-hmm. And so I'm asking, why is it going down And you're saying, well, because you know no action is taken on 18%, well, either that means that in 99 there were fewer cases where there was no action needed at all because you're at 86% of either partially or fully resolved. I mean, something's different than it was before.
Right.
And so if you could provide that information to us for us to analyze.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. And just so that I don't leave the committee in the wrong direction, there are two. We have, as far as we can determine, there appear to be two reasons. And one is the fact, when we looked at the data this year and we looked at no action needed or appropriate, and we were comfortable, and I use that term, clearly I'd like to resolve all the complaints, but we understand that not everything can be resolved. The 4% was something that we could live with. There's another added dimension to this, and we have found that as the years progress, the complexity of the complaints is changing. We have a lot more complaints in which there is no clear path to resolution, and the resolutions, we have a lot more complaints where there are multiple involved parties with various competing interests. So we have two things going on here. One is that how the no action is needed or appropriate affects the total, and the other is a change in sort of some of the types of complaints that we're seeing and the complexity of the complaints that we're seeing. So there's two different things going on right here. But certainly we'll provide you with that information.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I kind of share the chair's concern about this chart. Now, maybe from a little different perspective, I think you're not getting the picture out you need to get out. When I look at this, a fully resolved, no action needed or appropriate, and withdrawn, that seemed to me is one category. That stuff's taken care of one way or the other. And then the partially resolved is the ones that are most interesting to me. That's about 19%. And then you've got to have 4 or 5% you just can't do anything about. And I understand that. I mean, it seems to me that if you put those three categories into one category and then followed your partial resolve, that's where your complex cases are concerned, I would guess. I deal with this every day just as you do. I'm always getting complaints about extended care facilities or nursing homes or foster homes. And most of these things are, I didn't like the soup today. My neighbor made too much noise last night. And that's the kind of stuff you have to deal with. And I understand that. And you guys do a great job of fixing that. Well, I have some understanding. And then you have more difficult ones, the cubidae that haven't healed and how to get good care in there to help that out. Those are probably the ones that are more complex, more difficult, and harder to resolve. And I think if you could break those categories differently, you'd show that you're taking care of the vast majority of these cases because you do. And then the small percentage ones, which are more complex and more difficult to take care of, that should be a different category. That's the category I really like to see looked at. So when you came back in a couple of years, you'd say the vast majority of people in this group were at 90%. We have a small group of partial resolved ones, which are very difficult, and that's where we're trying to make our best effort. And I just think this doesn't quite sift out in a way that's meaningful for people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, a point well taken. And what we had did in the chart is this is the way in which the federal government requires us to report the information, and certainly we can reformat it and look at it a different way. And our caseload is affected in a lot of different ways. For example, when the 2003 legislature commenced some of the cutbacks in long-term care, we had a huge upsurge in cases of people who were losing their long-term care homes. And so we had to totally redeploy our staff and our people to be out there working with those people, trying to apprise them of their rights, make sure that they got a reassessment if that was appropriate. a face-to-face, and I know that this is something that you've been concerned about, Senator Bates, but also a face-to-face reassessment. And so we had to, a huge redeployment of our staff in order to deal with those cases. And those cases were not cases that we were, could count as being resolved, because at the end of the day, you know, the state prevailed, and those people had to find some other place to live, and it wasn't a long-term care facility. We had victories along the way, partial victories, but by and large, you know, the victories were the people that were getting reassessed. But so what I'm reflecting on is that we had a lot, that when I talk about when we residents bump up against reimbursement limitations, those kinds of complaints get very, very challenging to resolve. And those are complaints that all come into our office as well as into senior services. The performance measure 04 is also tied to goal number one, and that is the percentage of abuse complaints that are referred appropriately. The agency's role with respect to abuse complaints is significantly different from its role in non-abuse complaints. For abuse complaints, the agency makes a referral to the primary investigating agency, Adult Protective Services. The Ombudsman Program monitors the investigation to ensure that the complaint is investigated. After the written report is produced by Adult Protective Services, the Ombudsman Program will review the findings and, if requested, respond to any questions from the complainant, and, if appropriate, will challenge the investigation on the complainant's behalf. Linked to Oregon Benchmark 51, Substantiated Elder Abuse per 1,000 Oregonians Age 65 and Older, this measure looks at the agency's cases that included complaints of abuse and whether they were appropriately referred. In 2004, 99% were appropriately referred. Elder abuse is a regular continuing education topic for certified ombudsmen, and the agency has set aside more staff time for monitoring ombudsman casework. Both of these factors contributed to the improvement in this measure.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to understand exactly what this 99% means. Appropriately referred, but does that also include the monitoring of the follow-up of the investigation? I guess what I'm interested in is how well are your partner agencies responding? The Protective Services, Senior and Protective Services, of District Attorneys. Is there a good response from the people that you report to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, normally what this chart represents is the 799 complaints that were referred to Adult Protective Services. And as you probably are aware, system is severely strained, and about 45% of the reports that come out of that system exceed either statutory or regulatory timeframes for completion. And so the monitoring part is a challenge. I mean, that system is strained, and what we have to do is we have to it's a continual interaction to try to ascertain whether or not the matter has been investigated, and to secure the report once the investigation is completed. But that is a significant workload issue for our program. That. When we make those referrals and the subsequent monitoring.
Thank you.
The chart on page 19 is to give the committee an idea of sort of the body of complaints that's not referred, and then when we do refer them, who they're referred to.
Okay. Could we kind of go back and forth between pages like 1819 and pages 74 and 75? For instance, remember, we've gone from performance measure number one, where we had some questions, and so because we don't understand the data, we're going to wait on that one until we get more information. We've skipped to performance measure number four, which talks about the percentage of abuse complaints that are referred appropriately, and we're about to go to performance measure number seven, which deals with how many times facilities are visited, and we're skipping over performance measure number two on page 74, which talks about average initial response time to non-referred cases, which to me, now we're, you know, number two and number three are actual things that will have a direct relationship on the people. For instance, the number of workers that we have is a nice thing to compare, but it doesn't indicate the amount of benefit there is to the people. And by the way, I think it's a great program. I think you're doing a great job, but I have no way of knowing if you're doing a great job unless we go into these kinds of things and we have comparisons and so forth. And so I'm looking at performance measure number two. It says average initial response time for non-referred cases, and we've gone from 0.63 of a day, just a little over half a day's delay between the time of the complaint to response, to 03, it was 2 and a tenth days, and last year it was 1.5 days. And so the response time has lengthened every year, except for, you know, was slightly longer in 03 than 04, but 03 and 04 both are longer than 02. And the time that was set for target was 1 day's response in 03 and 04. And then it's supposed to go to 9/10 of a day's response in 05, but 06 and 07 is going to go to 1.5 days response, and yet in 99 and 2000 it was less than these kinds of limitations. So what I'm asking is, one, why is it taking longer to make the response time than it was? You know, the trend is not good. And the second is, why are the targets longer instead of shorter, since this is something that directly relates to what is in the best interest of the clients that you're serving.
Mr. Chairman, the data, and we made significant progress from last year in the data, which I thought was a good thing, but there are many things that affect the response time, and some of those things are not in the control of the ombudsman. For example, we get there's a large volume of complaints that come into the Salem office, and somebody will call in the Salem office with a billing problem, and they will outline a billing problem. So then, pursuant to that problem, we will say, in order to address this billing problem, do you have this document? Do you have this document? And they will say, yes, I think I have it somewhere in my files. Could you fax it or mail it to us? And so we don't consider the initial response time the way we define it in the program, and we've tightened up this definition, and that's part of the reason why the response time, the trend has changed, is that an initial response has to materially advance the case. So to merely do an intake of a case and ask for data isn't a response in our judgment. So it might have been 3 years ago, but we have changed the definition of what an initial response is. And the definition is it has to materially advance the case. So in the case that I just described, we would wait until we get those documents in from the person, and then we would start working on those documents and commence the investigation of that issue based on those documents. Sometimes those people will respond within 24 hours. Sometimes they'll take a week to respond. Sometimes they'll say to us something like, I'm sorry, you know, I had other priorities in my life. My, you know, my uncle died or whatever, and I'm sorry it took me a month to get you those documents. So there's a couple things. What I'm trying to point out is there's a couple of things that have happened here. The most significant in the trend is that we have tightened up what a first action is.
Okay, when did that tightening up take place?
I think that tightening up happened about, I think it was somewhere in 2000, and was it 2002 or two or three? Yeah, it was, you know, we started to look at all the cases and look at the data and look at what people were suggesting was a first action. And so, you know, and with the staff, I have to tell you, we monitor first actions, and if they've dated something as a first action and it doesn't materially move the case forward, it's not considered a first action.
Okay. Let me look at both aspects of what you're saying. First is, when you say, well, sometimes people don't respond, I assume that that hasn't changed. I mean, people are who they were. You know, 5 years ago, you still were dealing with elderly who didn't always have the information right at hand and those kinds of things. So I think that unless there's been something that changes the nature of the complaints, you'd have had to deal with the same kind of difficulty in what you're dealing with as far as the population is concerned several years ago as you would now. If there's been a change in the way that you're measuring things, that's, you know, certainly that makes a change, because you can't compare now with then if the measuring level is different. If the change took place in 03, then actually you're going downhill from 99 to 03 before the change was made, and so now there's been a change, and so maybe it is better and maybe it's not. It's very difficult to draw a conclusion without having all the information. And so if you'd like to provide us with, you know, the changes and when those took place, that'd be fine. But the job that we're trying to accomplish here is to evaluate the performance measures, make sure that the performance measures actually relate to performance and that the trends are going well. You know, and if not, then what changes do need to be made? We're also asked to look at the targets. And the co-chairs have asked for us to determine and make suggestions about performance measures and the targets. And when targets are becoming less rigorous, then, you know, we have to justify why should they be less rigorous than they were in the past.
And Mr. Chairman, that point is well taken. And there's another dynamic in our program is that I would venture to say is that, you know, we have a lot more complaints that are coming into the Salem office. And our volunteers who are in their communities locally responding are able to respond quicker than we are, the limited staff in the Salem office. We have 4 FTE staff that is responding to these complaints. So part of this also may be that there may be a distinction between how quickly the volunteers are able to respond and how quickly the staff are able to respond. Because also the nature of the kinds of complaints that come into the staff are also one that maybe that are frequently more needing the extra information that may or may not be forthcoming quickly. And there are other reasons that affect first actions as well. We have families, for example, that call in and they say, well, we're giving you the complaint, but we don't want you to take any action right now. And then they'll call back in a month. So it may be that what I think is happening more is the dynamic of what's happening in the central office is changing in terms of the kinds of complaints, you know, what it takes to get a first action and those kinds of complaints. And it may be less of impact of what's happening out in the field among the volunteers. But we can look at that data as well and provide that with you if you so desire.
I'm just trying to determine trends and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
On 03, average time to close non-referred cases. We've gone 99 from, you know, under 34 days to 38 days. Again, the trend isn't good. And the targets are going from 32, 31 days to 36 days. And so I'm just wondering, and I know that these are not serious abuse complaints. These are non-referred cases. But our job is to try and, you know, it's so that there is an oversight, that there's, mm-hmm. these questions get asked. Can you tell me, you know, Or why? What's changed to make it longer now for that?
Mr. Chairman, it is, and I'm not saying this flip in any way to be flip, but it is what it is. In other words, what we do is we are continuously monitoring through performance reports, cases, the closing of cases, and all of that. And the data just happened to come out this way. And I guess when we looked at it, when we first set these performance measures and our targets, the progress board said that they were ambitious, but they thought that they could be achieved, but they said that they were very ambitious, and we wanted to have targets that challenged us, but we also tried to have to be realistic, and the fact of the matter is that I would love it, if we could resolve every issue and respond really quickly to every issue, but we just don't always have the person power to do that.
I don't mean to be going back and forth, but I'm not saying that mm-hmm. these should be done in 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm not. All I'm saying is the trend is that it's getting longer and longer, and I'm asking if you can give me an idea why the trend is getting longer. I'm not looking for you mm-hmm. to tell me that some things just take a long time. I'm understanding that. I'm just asking why the trend is opposite. It's not maintaining. It's just getting longer.
And, Mr. Chairman, the only thing that I can tell you about that is that when we look at the data, we look at the cases that the ombudsman are working on, the many of the cases require some significant back and forth. It used to be, when an ombudsman went into a facility, if it was a nursing facility, if it were, for example, a call light button issue where the resident needed their call light answered, they could go in and talk to an aide and get that call light button problem addressed if no one was answering the resident's call light. But our complaint loads are changing, and we're seeing complaints that take a lot of back and forth, a lot of serious negotiation, a lot of care planning, and when I say complexity, I don't use the term lightly. And so I guess what we're trying to do is sort of come to terms. We're relatively novice at setting targets. I mean, we wanted targets that clearly challenged us. Mm-hmm. But we also want to come to terms with the realities of some of the issues and the problems that we're dealing with and recognize that they aren't simple and try to get at a place where we can maintain sort of a trend for a period of time.
Okay.
Or maintain a,
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Senator Bate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked a question along these lines. What would really help me have a sense of what you're trying to do is I'd like to see how many volunteers and ombudsmen you have over the last, say, 6 or 7 years compared to the population size you're taking care of and the age of that population size. I believe the ratio has probably been changing. I would guess that you have fewer workers, a larger population, and an older population you're dealing with, which means more problems. I'd like to see those figures and see where we're going on them. It's just my guess, but my guess is that's where it's at.
Okay.
If you can you get those figures easily, or is it a real difficulty?
We will make every effort to get you the figures, Mr. Chair.
I don't want
Senator
you wasting a lot of time. If you can get those figures quickly and easily, it'd be interesting to see what those trends are.
Okay, that'd be good. Ms. Manthey.
Mr. Chair, one of the things that I thought was interesting about this measure when I was reviewing it with the agency is I asked them to break it down, because percentages can be misleading. I asked them to break it down how many were under and how many were over, and what they reported was that for the 2004, the 38 days, 71% of the complaints were handled an average of 9.5 days. 29% took 104 days. So perhaps if it were one of the things, if you wanted to zero in, is we could restructure the measure so you could start to zero in on those things that were taking longer, and factoring out those things that you were able to handle really quickly. Again, I don't know if that would be helpful or not in this, to you in this particular measure, but clearly a large percentage of the complaints they're handling very quickly. At least 9.5 days seems pretty quickly to me.
Well, but see, now that's all relative, because it would depend on how they compare with what's been done in the past.
Exactly.
Because maybe it was 80% before. So
and that's what I mean. So if we could start seeing that over time, then you could get a better sense of what was actually happening.
Okay.
So, thank you.
All right. Thank you. We can go ahead and proceed.
Performance measures 7, 8, and 9 are tied to goal number 2. Which is establish a routine presence in long-term care facilities using a cadre of trained program volunteers. The regular presence of persons from outside of facilities has been identified as an important factor in improving quality of care and quality of life in facilities. The Ombudsman program is at its best when the Ombudsman spend enough time in a facility to know the residents and earn their trust. This allows the Ombudsman to detect concerns about residents' conditions before they become serious and creates an opportunity for developing a positive working relationship with facility administration and staff. The regular visits of the friendly visitors alleviate resident loneliness and isolation while opening up the facilities to community presence. These measures address the agency's success in achieving regular facility visitation, as defined by the Federal Administration on Aging, as no less than a visit in each quarter. Numerous facilities receive weekly or biweekly visits for periods of time during the year. In federal fiscal year 2004, program representatives made a total of 13,876 facility visits. Agency representatives made quarterly visits to 64% of Oregon's nursing facilities, exceeding the 55% target. The agency made quarterly visits to 40% of the assisted living and residential care facilities, exceeding the target of 33%. While the growth in the number of these facilities has tapered off, the total number has expanded by 24% since 2001, making the increase in visitation by the program even more significant. The agency was determined to increase its presence in adult foster care homes. Although the program representatives made more than 2,000 visits to adult foster care homes in 2001, only 1.5% of the homes received quarterly visits that year. With program attention to this performance measure, this increased to 10% in 2004. Program representatives made a total of 3,096 visits to adult foster care homes during the year. And I just want to place the foster care, reaching the residents of the 1,700 foster care in some perspective. For the same travel time as other kinds of facilities, the Ombudsman only reaches 5 residents in an adult foster care home. And we were much more able to get into foster care homes in the early to mid-90s when there wasn't such a surge in the number of residential care and assisted living facilities.
Do you recall if there's been an increase in the number of volunteer certified long-term care ombudsmen in Oregon? Has there been a change in the number in recent years?
Mr. Chairman, we were actually on page 24. We will be getting to that performance measure, or we can discuss it now if you wish.
Well, I guess it kind of leads into the question as to, did you say the federal government requests, or that the goal that they have is 100% visitation every quarter?
What the federal government standard is they look to quarterly visitation as a marker for regular visitation by ombudsmen. And the thought behind that is that residents have access to an ombudsman, at least minimal access throughout the year. And so that's the thought behind that. That's no way optimal. Optimal for many facilities is a weekly visitation, particularly in the larger facilities when there are many residents to contact and interact with. But that is the marker that the federal government uses in the, and the standard by which they collect their data with respect to our programs.
Okay. The goal has been set for a third, and now the goal is being adjusted to 55%. And it looks like, you know, we're, for the last few years, we're hovering between 33 and 34, 35%, so an average about 34%. Is that, what do you see as a reasonable goal? Is 55% a reasonable goal? I'll tell you what I'm also looking at is on page 5, we have a comparison with other states, and under the column that says number of facilities, or the row that says number of facilities visited at least quarterly, it says Oregon's national rank is 38th, Washington is 7th, California is 1st, and Idaho is 32nd. And I'm just wondering, you know, it looks like we're not in the top half of the other states, and whether or not it's a reasonable goal to, you know, to seek to improve that, what it would take.
Mr. Chairman, to be quite frank, our ability to get in facilities is limited by the number of volunteers that we have as certified ombudsmen and the number of staff in the program. There's a direct link between staff and volunteers, and we routine visitation is the place where, because of the phenomenal growth in, as Senator Bates referenced, in long-term care facilities in Oregon in the last 15 years, it's been an enormous challenge with the person power that we have, and that's why one of the things that we do now, and some volunteers grumble, is that we require the volunteers to take an assignment of at least 100 beds. And many of them take many more than that, but part of that is to try to get to as many residents as we possibly can.
Okay. Senator Bates.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First, I want to congratulate you on your foster care situation. I was particularly worried about that a couple of years ago. I really consider these people the ones at highest risk. There are only 5 to a foster care setting. They don't have a lot of visitations from the big institutions. There's people coming and going all the time because there's so many family members involved just because of their size. And at the time we were looking at it a couple of years ago, it was around 1% on a quarterly basis and probably no more than 10 or 15% on an annual basis. I can't remember the exact figure, but you've made a huge change here, and I appreciate that, especially with diminishing resources. I think the other thing affecting this group may be that when you compare it to other states, we are an exceptional state, and we have a lot of foster residential and assisted living facilities. Other states have their clientele focused into extended care facilities or nursing homes. They're a lot easier to get to on a numbers basis. You can get to that nursing home, see, you know, 100 people, whereas if you're trying in the same length of time to see people in assisted living facilities or residential care or foster care, you've got driving time, you get into a facility, you see 5 or 6, and you've got to move somewhere else to see 5 or 6 more. So my guess is it's hard to compare us to like states when our system is so much different than others. Our payoff for that is that we do it at a lower cost than other states do because extended care facilities are so expensive. The downside is for people like yourselves trying to work inside that system, you can't look as efficient because you have to move around so much to see those homes. Now, if I'm wrong in that, please correct me, but that's my sense of what you're trying to do here.
No, Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct. I mean, we it is a challenge. I guess if you were going to compare us, Washington does have foster care homes. And if you were going to compare us, that would be the state that we would be most closely aligned to in terms of the kinds of facilities. And if you look at that chart on page 5, you'll see that they are ranked seventh in the number of visited quarterly. But interestingly, if you look at that, we have a much higher volume of complaints that our program handles. So there's an offset there. I mean, we're handling many more complaints relative to that particular state. So they're achieving quarterly visitation, but we have a higher volume of complaint if you compare that to the number of facility beds that we have. And if you look also at their the number of staff and volunteers they have is way out of the ballpark compared to here in Oregon.
Could you address that? You know, because it says, you know, you said that we have 163 certified ombudsman volunteers. Their chart says that they have 440. How do you go about recruiting additional volunteers?
Mr. Chairman, we recruit volunteers in all sorts of ways. One of the primary ways is that we have a partnership with AARP, and they help us to recruit in targeted areas from around the state, from among their members. We also are on, we have our own website. We also have volunteer websites. We do in some markets, we use the media. But we have all of those ways combined to recruit volunteers in the program. And
because I would think that as we talk about these various aspects, a real key point is the number of certified volunteer ombudsmen you have. I mean, if you had twice as many or if you had 100 more, then certainly it would change all the numbers. And I don't know how unrealistic that is or not. I don't know what Oregon or what Washington's doing that we're not doing. And so I'm just bringing it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I will talk to or address when we address our next performance measure is that our volunteer labor force of certified ombudsmen is very much tied to the number of staff that can effectively supervise, train, and monitor and support them. So there's a direct link there, and so we are constrained in that way. And if you'd like, I can move into a discussion of that. The two remaining charts on the performance measure we were just talking about, which is the quarterly visitations on page 22 and 23, give you some more information about. Sort of fleshing out sort of our facility visitation in terms of program role on page 22, and also gives you an idea of the facilities that we have to visit and the ones that we have not. And as you can see, we clearly have our work cut out for us.
Training for long-term care facility.
Performance measure. The number of certified ombudsmen is also tied to goal number 2. And the total number of volunteer certified ombudsmen the agency can support is directly related to the number of staff available to supervise and support the volunteer effort. The Institute of Medicine recommends a 1 to 20 ratio is ideal and considers 1 to 40 the maximum. The agency's 4.0 FTE ombudsman supervisors can maximally support a workforce of 160 volunteers. The bottom line, though, is there's a tension in the program, and you'll see this reflected in the performance measure, between ensuring that there are not more volunteers than can be adequately supervised and supported by staff, but ensuring that there are enough volunteers, sufficient numbers, to meet the agency's responsibilities to offer ombudsman services to the residents of long-term care facilities. So although the target of 180 was realistic based on historical data, what we have found over and over again, and I think we've expressed this in previous discussions with this committee, is that it's difficult to sustain without adequate levels of support. In other words, we can do a recruitment and training binge, and get our numbers of volunteers up. But there's sort of a stasis in terms of what we can adequately support and supervise. And that really shouldn't be set higher than sort of the maximum that everybody looks at as plausible.
Representative Penna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell us what the historical data was that made that target of 180 realistic?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, we used to bring a lot of volunteers into the program at one point in time, a lot of certified ombudsmen, and there were times when the Institute of Medicine, for example, did their study in 1995 of long-term care ombudsman programs, their evaluation, we were cited as a state when they laid out this recommendation as 1 to 20 is ideal and 1 to 40 maximum. We were laid out as a state that had a 1 to 100 ratio. And it was sort of, so historically we had done a lot of recruiting. And we deliberately, after evaluating the data and evaluating the Institute of Medicine report, through attrition, we brought our numbers down in the program to get a little bit closer to the recommended ratios. But we continually flirt with periods where we recruit and we train because of our desire. I mean, it's that tension. You know, we get optimistic about wanting to have more people in the program because we realize the work is there, but understanding that ultimately we just don't maintain it. So we keep pushing that threshold, Representative Hanna, and that's the historical basis for that. But we're beginning to think that it's just not realistic.
Representative Hanna. Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Bates.
I'm confused. You intentionally allowed attrition to bring your numbers down, and at the same time, your data says, and I quote, while the agency has increased recruitment efforts, why let the numbers go down and increase the recruitment efforts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, where are you?
Page 82, the bottom sentence. While the agency has increased recruitment efforts, additional staff is needed to make substantial progress. I mean, it seems like a contradiction of effort there.
Well, yeah, I'm just.
May I follow up?
Well, Mr. Chair, one of the things is that.
Oh, go ahead.
One of the things is that there's an unevenness about recruitment. In other words, what we try to look at is we try to have some kind of balance throughout the state in terms of our volunteer numbers. And so there are areas where we absolutely have to increase our efforts because we're, you know, constantly in the more sparsely populated parts of the state, particularly eastern Oregon, we're challenged. And then there are areas, for example, like Lane County, where there's just people are, you know, we have more than enough ombudsmen for that particular county. So there are areas, I guess what I'm saying is there's a variation and throughout the state, and so we fluctuate. And what we do is we'll target zip codes and areas for trying to recruit people to the program.
Joe, follow up,
yeah,
and then Senator Bates.
Follow up, just a couple of items. I don't know when that increase in recruitment effort started, but from 2001 to 2004, you've had about an 18% reduction in the number of certified ombudsmen, and that seems to, you know, belay the effort, and maybe it's more and more difficult. My final comment on this number might also be that to just measure the number of folks that are certified in the program may not reflect at all the goal of having the proper number of people in the facilities, i.e., if you increased your number of folks by 10%, but the number of people needing additional service is 20% increase, you're spreading the gap between them. So I might suggest that we have a measurement that might be more something along the ombudsman per 1,000 Oregonians over 65, or a certain per capita of certified trained individuals, because this number could be completely arbitrary to the population needing served. I'm not sure you really hit any kind of target by just giving the number.
Okay. It would be, it'd be good to have a relationship, although it wouldn't be the total number of elderly, because services are only to those that are in these four different kinds of...
No, but a per capita measurement number would give you a closer target than just to say how many people are out there.
Okay. Senator Bates?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hand, I want to thank you for that wonderful segue to something I want to point out. I'd like us all to go to page 5 just for a moment. I want to make sure I'm reading the numbers correctly. This is for 0203. And I want staff and the agency to correct me if I'm wrong in reading these numbers. Number of beds per program staff down at the very bottom of that chart for Oregon. Now, number of beds would be a rough representation of the number of people you have in the system. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, yes.
Oregon by staff, that's your number you have in your agency. You're dead last at 50th. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, we're 50th out of 52 because the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico also have programs.
Thank you for correcting me.
No.
Thank you for correcting me.
Footnote indicates that that's based on 6 FTEs and we have 8, and so there's a 25% difference there. Is that adjusted for that?
This is... Mr. Chairman, this is based on paid there's another note that says it includes all paid professional staff. We have to support clerical staff in the agency.
And but just assume you're pretty close to the bottom of the pack as far as numbers concerned, as far as numbers in your agency compared to the people you're trying to serve. Is that a good assessment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, I think that's accurate.
If you go up to the third line down and look at Oregon's ranking as far as the amount of money going to the agency per long-term bed facilities, we rank 44th according to this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, yes, it is.
Still low. Your costs are low, the number of people you have in your program are low compared to the number of people you're trying to serve.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, yes, that's true.
Then you look at the number of certified volunteers you have, and you rank high, 14th. So for the population served, the cost of serving those people, you rank high as far as producing volunteers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that is correct.
That indicates to me you've got an agency doing a hell of a job. And that your need is to increase the number of people you have in your program if you want to make any substantive change as far as getting out and visiting foster homes, residential care, and nursing homes. Those figures make sense to you the way I've just presented them?
That would be Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates.
We've danced around this now for 45 minutes.
But that is how I assess the data.
Well, we've danced around this for 45 minutes.
Well, but there's some other issues that certainly it is going well. I have a question, though. You said that it was that Oregon was looking at one supervisor for 100 until data came out indicating that it should be much less and that it's been coming down since then. Was that correct?
Mr. Chairman, we had been pushing the limits, but our volunteers, there's a lot that's happened in the Ombudsman program in the last, since 1995. The Federal Administration on Aging has really, as states in the legislature, but data became very, very important, and developing a national data system for ombudsman programs became very important. And pursuant to all of that, that overlay in 1995 was also something that caused us all programs across the nation, to really have to shore up our ombudsmen have, we gave them bigger jobs, we were asking them to do more, they required more support, they had to be supervised, they needed supervision. One of the things that we do at our toll-free number is 5 days a week, we have a professional staff person at the end of the phone, and that staff person answers all the calls that come in, and that includes not only people from around the state who were making complaints, but it includes ombudsmen asking for technical assistance. So all of that has gotten beefed up probably in the last decade, and so we have had to shore up and really work, you know, to try to support these people adequately. And if and we don't always we try, but we you know and but we don't. If you ask them, they would tell you that they probably could use a lot more.
No, it sounds like it, and I think that Senator Bates' points, you know, are very well taken. You know, we're trying to determine if there's things that can be done to make it work better, to you know, give you greater support. It's unlikely that there's going to be more money, you know, being placed, and so although we're going into this detail, it is not meant to be a criticism. It is meant to try and get accurate information. Okay,
Mr. Chairman, I enjoy being challenged. I enjoy being made to think. So I have absolute, you know, I think it's real important. I think it's very important for you to ask any questions you need to better understand this program, and that's my job, is to help you to understand this program.
If you have 163 certified long-term care ombudsman, is it possible that out of that number that there's five who, because of their intelligence and experience, financial situation, time, energy, might become supervisory, long-term volunteer ombudsman, and could therefore help supervise others?
Mr. Chairman, you know, it's very interesting that you asked that, because in the early years, we've tried all that. We've had all sorts of permutations of volunteer. There's probably nothing in this program that we haven't tried at least once in trying to try to make it better, more efficient. And we tried that. And it ultimately broke down. And it broke down because there are a lot of volunteers that, for a period of time, they can devote a large amount of time to the program, and they clearly excel. But sometimes that's episodic, and so they will do that, and they may have to take a leave of absence. And what we found is that there was not the continuity in terms of output that was needed, even though we had some, and continue to this day to have some fine people. The other thing is that it is always an issue when volunteers supervise other volunteers. That does sometimes cause issues to arise in the program, and we did have people tell us that they really wanted a staff person to, you know, to help guide them through their ombudsman work. And so, you know, all I can tell you is we've experimented with that for many, many years, and just found that it didn't allow us to be maximally efficient, even though we had some stellar people.
I've heard from other programs that you really do need staff to supervise the volunteers, because the volunteers don't always have the same ability and dedication to be there every day like they do if it's a regular job. But I'm just trying to test that. Representative Hansen, and then Senator Wesley.
Well, more of a comment than a question, but I'm very impressed that we have 160 volunteers that are willing to go through a six-day certification program. It's not unique. When I was with Metro, we had zoo volunteers that were putting in 2,000 hours a year.
That's full-time.
But when we think in terms of the complexity of the issues that we're dealing with, both this, another example would be CASA. Again, incredibly volunteer-driven programs. But if we're asking people to volunteer both that much and deal with this type of a complex, complicated problem, then I think we absolutely owe it to them to give them the resources, the professional staff help and stuff, so that they can feel that their job, that they're doing well in their job, and they feel that they're really supported. If we don't, we'll lose the whole program.
And I don't know what that appropriate level of support is, whether it's 20. I think it's probably closer to 1 to 20 than 1 to 100. But we need to, but that's what we have an agency for, is to determine those types of relationships. But if we're asking volunteers to drive this program, we've got to support them.
Okay. Okay, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for benefit of those in the audience and watching at home, particularly the volunteers in the audience, to put in perspective what's going on up here, I mean, this is a critique process. It's not a criticism process, and so, but obviously we'll be asking questions that might cause some to view us as being negative or skeptical. That is far from what's going on. I mean, this is a normal part of the process, and I think we all share the sentiment that any time you have an agency and an organization that is able to motivate citizens, not just committed to seniors, but citizens that are committed to their communities in such numbers with such effectiveness, that's a phenomenal accomplishment. So we thank you and appreciate very much what you do. Oh, I just wanted to say that. And make sure you stay above America, Samoa, Guam, and the Virgin Islands. We don't want any, we don't want any backwards.
Senator Westland, it's a tight race.
And one other thing, if I could, Mr. Chair, for the people watching at home, hopefully Senator Winters is feeling well enough to be tuned in today. She just came out of the hospital yesterday from a very serious surgery, and I know she's doing well, and Senator Winters was very instrumental in getting this program off and on good footing. So, Jackie, love and blessings wherever you are.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, Jackie.
Yeah.
He's watching us.
She's here. We're carrying the flag here.
Mr. Chairman, just to finish off the performance measure and number of certified ombudsmen, I just want to tell you that it's part of the staff support for the volunteers. In 2004, the staff conducted 116 support meetings. Those are local meetings where the staff goes to the volunteers in communities throughout the state and has 2 hours where they do technical assistance, they discuss cases. And so we basically held 116 of those support group meetings, and we provided 28 local continuing education sessions. We require that the ombudsman take advantage of 10 hours of continuing education a year in order to maintain their certification with the program. And the agency largely provides, although they have other options in their communities, the agency does provide a lot of that continuing education as well.
I imagine that's part of the reason that you've been successful in maintaining, the level of volunteers that you have, is that takes a lot of commitment to be able to go out and do that many training meetings in that many different locations.
Mr. Chairman, it does. It's but we recently surveyed the ombudsman, all the volunteers, in terms of what they thought the value of these meetings were, and they overwhelmingly came back and said that they were necessary, they were, they were desirable, they were necessary, and that they really needed them to be able to do their work. So we decided to continue those.
Okay, we're going to need to make sure that we have time for the priority and the 10% reductions too.
Mr. Chair, I just want to get to, because you'll be pleased with these targets, so I would like to get to this one performance measure, which is number 13, which is tied to goal number 3, which is ensure that consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies are aware of the Ombudsman Program and its services. And this is the number of requests for assistance and consultations from consumers, the public, facility staff, and agencies. And this measure looks at the complaints that are brought to the agency by residents, families, friends, and others requests for training and presentations from facilities and the public, consultations and invitations to participate in resident and family councils. The increase results from an increase in complaints and an increase in the number of individuals contacting the agency for consultation. The three most frequent consultation topics are facility placement information, information about guardianships and conservatorships, and questions about billings. While this measure demonstrates that consumers and the public are increasingly aware of the program, exceeding our target by 47% does have workload implications.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Nice job.
And then our last performance measure that we were going to discuss with you today, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is tied to goal number four, which is advocate for system-wide changes that promote and protect the rights and interests of long-term care residents. System advocacy is considered to be an important part of what the ombudsman does. And this measure is not a perfect measure in any way, and it basically... And even the numbers and the targets are not really the essence of the measure. We struggled with this when we sat down with the progress board because we were trying to figure out a measure where we could better communicate with you about the fact that the agency engages in system advocacy. And so, and this is when we put all of our heads together and worked on it and refined it, this is as close as we could to putting it in a performance measure format. But basically what the agency does is that we work continually at the state level to achieve changes on behalf of residents. And basically the agency's advocacy is informed by the data generated by ombudsman activity throughout the state. And we represent the residents' interests in state-level meetings and work groups. And in 2004, we addressed issues such as new rules for dining assistance in nursing facilities, quality assurance for waivered services, service priority levels for Medicaid eligibility. That was a budget note that this committee had placed in senior services budget. Residential care facility rule revisions and adult protective services. And basically, the agency actively monitors legislation relating to long-term care facilities and takes positions on bills that impact the quality of care of long-term care facility residents. We also serve as an advisory capacity to other consumer organizations. The state ombudsman, which is me, is a member of the Medicaid Long-Term Care Quality and Reimbursement Advisory Council. So what this is meant to impart to you is that we're actively representing the residents' interests and bringing those to the table. And whether it's a room, normally when you have rule revisions in the state that affect facilities, there's a lot of regulatory people at the table. There are a lot of providers at the table. There are very few who represent the residents and the consumers, and our agency is one of the consistent presence in those forums in order to ensure that viewpoint gets considered when rules are being developed and revised. Are there any more questions with respect to our performance measures? If not...
No, I think we can move on.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make a comment.
Senator,
I was glad to make those laudatory remarks while our friend in the yellow shirt was out of the room.
This is a single program agency, so we only have one activity to prioritize. That moves us rather quickly into the 10% reduction. The 10% reduction seeks to reduce $54,521 in general funds. The other funds reduction would include a loss of $73,766 in federal funds. And so what we did to try to make this more manageable is that we broke out the 10% reduction option into two increments. And the first increment of 5% would eliminate the two annual statewide training and recognition conferences for the program volunteers. And it would eliminate two-thirds of the printing of our consumer information and recruitment materials and all agency dues and subscriptions. So that's within the first 5%. And in the second, what we would do is we would eliminate the unemployment assessment, which is in our personal services budget, and then we would reduce data processing down to $5,661. And this would effectively eliminate the agency's connection to the state network and individual emails. And it would eliminate our professional services for information and technology, which is called IT professional services, which we use to develop our reports in the program. So we've on the page 31, we've set out the reduction by line item, and the goal in the reduction was to maximize our ability to provide a statewide program of ombudsman services as required by the Federal Older Americans Act. And that was the basic goal in developing the cuts as we did. Mr. Chairman, have you any questions?
Any questions? No, I think you covered everything very thoroughly. Senator Carter?
We're about to conclude. Have you got any questions for us?
No.
Don't you come in.
Good.
This is good. She's
attending a committee. She's official.
That's right. She's here, and she's been busy doing many other things.
That's right.
Are there any other questions or comments from any committee members before we conclude? With a single emphasis, cuts would be absolutely a disaster in this instance, so we understand that. Thank you for the detailed information, and we appreciate the information that you will be providing for us so that we can take a look at these other areas and some comparisons. And we hope that you understand that, you know, as we've gone through these things, it's been because we're trying to get accurate information, and we do appreciate very much what you and all of your volunteers are doing to help watch out for some of the most needy in our population. I mean, these are those that have no voice and have no opportunity to look out for themselves because they're frail and vulnerable. And so the service that you're providing is tremendous, and it does make a difference. And without it, people would be suffering that have hope because of what you're doing. And we'd like to congratulate you and all of those that work with you for the fine work that you're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If no other comments, we will adjourn. Thank you.
I told my son one day.